Hey, everybody. CKCB is on this upcoming Valentine's Day multi-true crime podcast collaboration. So check out this spot and look for the episode when it comes out around Valentine's Day.
Hey, listeners. I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa.
We're the hosts of the chilling podcast, Buried Motives.
And guess what, folks? We've got something special for you this Valentine's Day.
That's right. We've teamed up with some of our incredible podcast friends for a one-of-a-kind collaboration.
Introducing the Broken Hearts Collaboration.
Every true crime enthusiast knows that love can sometimes take a turn, leading to unimaginable consequences.
This Valentine's Day, join us as we explore cases where love went horribly wrong. It's a twisted journey through the darker side of relationships.
You've heard of the 7-year itch, right? That crucial time when tensions escalate and couples are put to the ultimate test.
Well, in this collaboration, we've got something special for you. Each podcast will share a case representing 1 year out of the infamous 7-year itch.
We've delved into the depths of true crime to bring you stories that will send shivers down your spine.
So buckle up, listeners. Get ready for an unforgettable ride through the world of broken hearts.
We hope you enjoy this special collaboration as much as we loved putting it together.
Subscribe now to Buried Motives and our amazing friends podcast. Don't miss the Broken Hearts collaboration coming this Valentine's Day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults,
and Beer.
True crime from the point of view of two crazy Florida men.
Florida.
Florida.
Duh.
I wouldn't live anywhere else, though.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, BTK wasn't in Florida. We had Ted Bundy and Danny Rowling. Mm. But anyway, I'm Bill.
And I'm Paul.
And my beverage of choice today, I have a glass of water. You know, it's kind of my trademark.
Oh, water. Yeah.
Mm. This is high quality. Tap H2O.
Quality is everything. And here, yes.
And my dark blue sippy cup, I have Bacardi and water minus the Bacardi.
Yes.
Oh. This doesn't hold very much water. Damn.
Was it 16 or 20 ounce?
I think it's 25, 24. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just went out this morning and bought it. Well, yesterday. Wow. Before we did last week's episode. So just a recap. I mean, we covered BTK, the Otero Motors and how he botched that. The Bright murder and how he botched that. We covered the Shirley Vian murder and how he botched that. I mean, basically, it's just a whole bunch of botches. It's botulism.
Bunch of botchery.
Bunch of botulism. Now, botchery, that's kind of like debauchery, which can be fun at some point. No, we're just going to call that. That's it. Botulism.
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 If you want to hear some more botulism, don't forget, if this is your first time watching, please click subscribe, like, share, comment, and listen to us wherever you listen to your podcast.
Indeed. Botulism. I like that. That's, I might work that into the title somehow. Maybe because we haven't released
botulism.
Botulism. I've got to work that into the title. I'll even we haven't released part one yet, so I'm gonna work that into the title. I've never seen botulism on any other BTK podcast, so hell yeah. So botulism. except I'm gonna spell it B-O-T-C-H. Botulism.
We'll botch the word.
Yeah. In honor of BTK.
There you go.
Botch TK. Oh my God. I some serial killers like to hear the true crime episodes about them. I hope he's one of them.
Right.
And then he'll be like, oh, these guys, they like me so much, they're doing me again.
Right? Man.
No, we hate you so much, we're doing it again. And we're doing a much better job of thrashing you this time around than we did before. So.
Oh, yeah. We're not done.
No.
Another not jab.
So, anyway. I have no ado, do you?
I do not have an ado. Do you do do? Let's do it.
Let's do. So we left you on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
That was a last minute audible on my part. I'm like, you know what? But we'll just pick up where we left off. So now BTK was a lot of things, but a poet was not one of them. But he thought he was. And he wrote a poem about Shirley on an index card, and he put it in the hidey hole.
Hidey hole.
Along with all of his other evidence, I mean trophies. And this award-winning poem reads, take it away, Paul.
Shirley Locks, Shirley Locks, wilt thou be mine? Thou shalt, thou shalt not scream, not yet fee the line, but lay on a cushion. And think of me and death, and now, and how it is going to be. Not exactly. Yeah.
Give this man an award. Actually, you know what? No, give Paul the award for suffering through that.
That is suffering.
So in this literary masterpiece, he rips off a nursery rhyme, Curly Locks. And then he talks as if he was dictating an 11th commandment. and then improperly uses the word fee, which I think it should have was meant to be feel. Yeah, but he said fee, so who am I to say otherwise? So at that point, I have no clue what he's saying. And then three lines that absolutely make no sense.
It does not.
And it kind of flows up until that last line. You know, it goes on like, thou shalt not scream, yet not yet fee the line, but lay on a cushion and think of me in death. And then just, and how it is going to be. The rest of it kind of had a little bit of a flow until that last line. That last line was just like,
you'd almost think like there's going to be like another line,
right?
And then another line, but it's like it doesn't. It like where's it taking me?
It leaves you on a cliffhanger, kind of like we did in part one.
Yeah, that's a really shitty haiku.
Yeah, BTK probably couldn't even spell haiku.
Oh.
H-Y-K-O-O.
Howdy ho.
And instead of 575, it would be 363. God. So, oh God. You know what? In part three, I'm going to write a haiku, an H-Y-K-O-O, and I'm going to do it in 3-6-3.
There you go.
And it'll be in part three. Holy crap! Am I
oh,
BTK?
Oh, yeah. Let's Am do I BTK? Some clever iambic pentameter.
I'm going to do a H-Y-K, a haiku. And I'm going to do it 3-6-3 in episode three, or in part three. I don't know if I should be worried about myself or proud, because that's fucking brilliant.
That is brilliant. Hey, gotta hand it to you, man. Creativity, man.
I'm going to do a production. I'm going to put background music in it. We'll just open the episode with it.
Yeah.
So later in 1977, Dennis was on the prowl again, and he fixated on a 25-year-old woman named Nancy Fox. He named this operation Operation Project Fox, or Foxtail, or Fox Hunt.
Mm.
He can't even make up his mind what he wants to call it, but there's three different titles there. Three is the number of the counting, and the number thou shalt count to shall be three. Two shalt thou not count, unless then proceeding to three. I dropped the actual clip in, but I don't want to get copyright claimed like we did on.
Oh,
the-
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But check the
audio clips are fun, but it's like
if we monetize the YouTube page, we're gonna have to have that episode not monetized.
Yep.
Unless we want to take it out, and I don't want to take it out because it fits so perfectly just like that would have.
Yeah.
But anyway, but get a load of this shit. Dennis found her name by checking the mailbox. The number three was in her address, 843 North Pershing. Another name for it was Project Rose. See, he screwed it up. It's four now.
Jeez.
He broke his own rule.
Yeah.
But he called it, I guess that's a nickname. Nickname. Yeah. In case the first three get copyright claimed, he's got Project Rose. It's a backup.
Yeah. Always good to have contingencies.
Yeah. So there were three letters in her last name, Fox, which he said sounded like sex. No wonder his poems are so incredible.
Yeah, right.
Fox sounds like sex. But foxes are smart and hard to catch, so he'd have to outsmart her. Pearl Harbor happened in December, so that signaled that he would have to sneak attack Nancy. What the?
Wow, he is really strategizing.
This was his first hit at night, December 8th. So he broke in and he hid in a closet and he waited for her to come home. When she arrived at home, she sat down to eat, and that was when Dennis jumped out of the closet. That was when Dennis came out of the closet.
Boogie boogie boogie.
Oh boy, this is going to be fun. She was feisty. She told him, get the hell out of her house, and she grabbed the phone. And Dennis laughed. He says, I've already taken care of the phone. That's my trademark. He told her that he was a traveling salesman and that he had a sexual problem and that she was going to help him with that. And if she cooperated, nothing bad would happen to her.
He's still sticking to that story with the salesperson thing?
Yeah, and the sexual problem.
Wow. Yeah.
But if
he
but
definitely has a sexual problem.
Yeah. If she cooperated, nothing bad would happen to her. Okay, so rape isn't a bad thing? Because at this point, she just thinks she's going to be raped.
Yeah.
So that's not bad, according to BTK.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Man, this guy is something.
He told her that he wanted her to strip and he wanted to take pictures of her and tie her up. And Janice was literally gushing because for the first time he had complete control of the situation. They talked and she smoked a cigarette and, you know, she was upset.
So
finally, after she smoked a cigarette, she stood up. She said, "Let's get this over with so I can go call the police."
Mm.
And Dennis, at that point, she's like, that was when she sealed her own fate because, you know, she had seen him.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Bullshit. That's just Dennis being Dennis. Oh, Dennis. You know damn well you weren't going to let her live anyway.
No, I know.
He's just trying to make for a better story. But I'm glad he did. I'm not glad that he killed anybody, but I'm glad that he did all this shit because it makes for a funnier episode.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Then again, he forgets his head condom.
Too bad his dad didn't wear a condom.
Yeah.
Or too bad his wife didn't swallow.
Yeah. Can't, dear. I got a dentist appointment today.
A dentist appointment?
Oh. Pretty soon this is going to become a freaking musical album because we're going to have a lot of drum sessions in this episode.
Oh, man. So he told her to undress. She asked if she could go into the bathroom to get undressed, and he said yeah, but he blocked the door with something so that she couldn't lock it or try to escape out the window or something like that. When she came out, Dennis was naked. Ew.
Wow.
And Nancy was still wearing a sweater. He told her to take it off, and she said she'd rather not, and he said, okay.
Okay.
He's all proud of himself for granting a wish. And in the book, he actually says, this relates to other times when I respected a victim's request. I'm sure she would have much rather he respected her first request, which was, get the hell out of my house.
Yeah.
So Dennis handcuffed her back. Dennis handcuffed her behind her back and he laid her down on the bed and he tied her feet and gagged her. He asked her if she had ever had sex in the butt with her boyfriend. He had no intention of doing it, but he called it mental rape or mental sodomy because she got the image of him doing that to her in her head.
Wow. This time he actually used handcuffs. Normally it's rope.
Yeah. He's evolving.
Yeah.
So we're not laughing at her. We're laughing at BTK and we're laughing at ourselves too.
Yeah. Ourselves and his methods.
So he began to strangle her. She passed out, but he brought her back. And when she came back, he whispered,
I'm BTK. I'm a bad guy.
In her ear. And then choked her out with her pantyhose. And in all of his excitement, he released all over Nancy and on the bed.
Hmm.
Ew.
Ew.
She did fight him before she died. She even grabbed his crotch and squeezed, but this just excited him even more. After the deed was done, he stole her underwear, her driver's license, and some jewelry. And then he cleaned up. Yeah, and he went, and the score went into the hidey hole.
Bad hole. What's with the driver's license, though?
It's just a trophy. It's actually, when you think about it, if you're somebody that's wanting all this glorification and all this stuff and all this infamy, if you know anybody like those three dude from part one that were trying to, you know, they were talking about the Oteros.
Yeah.
You know, they could have been charged for that and they could have been found guilty for it. But, you know, like, but if he's got the driver's license, hey, you know, he can prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, he's not going to walk up and say, hey, Mr. Officer so-and-so, here's Nancy Fox's driver's license to prove that I killed her. But you'll find out what he does. Mm-hmm. No, it's actually, you know, if you're one of these narcissistic pukes that just wants everybody to know his name and all that stuff and be infamous and everything, taking the driver's license is a perfect thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to mention, before he left, he did get a glass of water, because that was his trademark.
The glass. He's got to have that glass.
I've got my glass here.
There you go. I ain't got a glass. I got a tumbler with a microphone.
Did I have water?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if it does or not. Just say it does. So like in the Otero murders, he had left DNA. He had read all these detective magazines, but he didn't know that police collected stuff because it might be able to be frozen and then used as evidence in the future. Real genius, this one. Because the police were at that time. They were collecting stuff because it was like, hey, you know, technology advances. Maybe we could use it
mm-hmm.
in the future. And that didn't just happen in this case. It happened in a lot of cases back in the 70s, from like the 70s into the 80s and then into the early 90s when DNA started to become a thing.
Yeah, because, you know, you saw the movie Time Cop.
Yeah.
That was a good movie.
It's a real genius, this guy.
Yeah.
And in a confession, he said that this act of stealing jewelry was due to his Viking gene.
Eh?
His Viking gene.
Wow.
He has a Viking gene as much as I have a brother named Gene.
Yeah.
I don't. I actually do have a brother named Paul, ironically enough.
There you go. Yeah.
You're cooler than he is, though. Yeah, we don't talk. But the next day, Dennis was all excited because he finally had a project that had gone off without a hitch. He went out to eat breakfast at a cafe. I'm betting it was probably a Waffle House.
Yeah.
But there was a payphone nearby, and Dennis couldn't help himself. He just had to jumpstart the investigation. He called the police, and he said,
Yes, you will find a homicide at 843 South Pershing, Nancy Fox.
And then he didn't even hang up the phone. He left it dangling, which, of course, allowed police, you know, enough time to trace the call.
Yeah.
But obviously they went there, and he was already gone at that point. I mean, he wasn't going to stick around. He later laments, he's like, oh, that was kind of stupid to leave the phone dangling. Well, you think?
Well, so, fingerprints. Did he leave any fingerprints behind? Or was he wearing gloves?
He probably was.
Hmm.
I don't know. I mean, well, I'm guessing that even if he hadn't been wearing gloves, that would have been, you know, because somebody sees the phone dangling, you know, this is the 70s or the late 70s or whatever. If they see a phone dangling, they're going to come pick it and put it back up on the cradle.
Yeah. Yeah. Depending on how busy that area was, you know, someone else would have come pick it up. But if they trace that call and they go back to that phone, they're going to find multiple fingerprints. So
right. Yeah. And even if they did get Dennis Rader's fingerprints off of it, I used that phone. So what?
Yeah.
I was there earlier this morning and whatever, you know. So police went to the address and they found everything neat except for a cigarette that had been burned out in an ashtray. And, you know, the drawers and everything all pulled out and all that stuff. And, of course, a corpse on the bed. There were pry marks on the window. And, of course, Dennis Juice found on the bed and on Nancy. And they knew that this was BTK. And obviously the phone line had been cut as well. And, but still, nobody's picked up on the glass of water thing yet.
That is weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a unique thing. I mean, I drinking a glass of water, I never would have thought of that.
Mm-mm. I mean, yeah, funny.
Who would have ever thought about putting water into a glass and drinking it? You know, if you think about it, it could be a good way to quench your thirst.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a new thing. He should have patented that.
Yeah. It took a lot of energy and, you know, he broke a sweat and he's like dehydrated and he's like, oh man, I'm thirsty now. All right, grab a glass of water. Now of all these cases up to now or but he does us on all his murders. Forensics mm-hmm. comes in, they pull all this information, but they haven't seen this glass, or they haven't even paid attention.
Well, in some tellings of this that I've heard, he says that he would drink a glass of water, then clean the glass and put it away.
Mm. Okay. So yeah, because at first I was thinking, is he just leaving it? He drinks it and just leaves it.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, that's kind of what, that's probably more likely. Mm-hmm. And they just overlooked it because, yeah, it's a glass of water. You wouldn't really think, it's like, you know, everybody drinks glasses of water.
Yeah.
That's probably when he was confessing, he was like, yeah, I got a glass of water. And the investigators were probably like, come to think of it, there was a glass of water. So, police gave the audio of this call to the media and it was played on the news. And, Dennis knew that he had screwed up by making that call and leaving the phone dangling and he didn't even disguise his voice. His wife Paula even said that one time when the voice came on the TV that it was like, that kind of sounds like you, Dennis. And Dennis just laughed it off.
Oh.
Ironic historical cruelty right there.
Is there any well, I'm sure there's a clip of the original news broadcast somewhere.
Oh yeah, I've heard the clip.
Yeah.
Yeah, it the quality is horrendous, as you know. I mean,
yeah, back in the 70s.
Phone call recordings sound bad today.
Yeah.
They sounded 10 times worse back then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, hey, that sounds like Dennis. So Dennis decides to stir things up a bit. He mails Shirley Knox to the Wichita Eagle in January of 1978. They did nothing with it, which enraged Dennis. He then mailed a 2-page letter, another poem, and a drawing of how he had left Nancy Fox to KAKE-TV in early February. It was opened a few days later, and Dennis claimed responsibility for the Oteros, Shirley Van, Nancy Fox, and another unidentified victim, which obviously was Catherine Bright. But he wasn't claiming her by name because of how botched that project was. He was embarrassed by his own botulism.
Mm-hmm. Botch of that.
So Cake went public with the story, and now Wichita was scared to death because they knew BTK. They knew that this guy who killed the Oteros, he's calling himself BTK, but they didn't really know that he was a serial killer at that point, but that confirmed it. And everybody in Wichita just freaked out.
Yeah. ADT gets more calls. We want a system. We want a system.
The poem, speaking of botched, was a botched version of an old American folk call, an old American folk song called "Oh Death." Dennis's version goes, and this is verbatim. Take it,
Paul. Let me see if I can botch this botchery. Oh Death to Nancy. That's the title.
Yeah.
What is this that I can see? Cold, icy hands talking hold of me. Taking hold of me. For death has come, you all can see. Hell has opened its gate to trick me. Oh, death, can't you spare me? Over for another year. I'll stuff your jaws till you can't talk. I'll blind your legs till you can't walk.
Blind them.
Interesting. I'll tie your hands till you can't make a stand. And finally, I'll close your eyes so you can't see. I'll bring sexual death unto you for me. That's another painful one.
He'll tie her hands so she can't make a stand. Just she walking? Is she like?
She, the, I yeah. I don't. Walk, I don't
walking around on her hands.
Maybe.
No, but he just rewrote some of the lyrics poorly. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dennis. But I think I'll stick to the original. I mean, you can find there's a bunch of different versions of that on Spotify. I was gonna get one on here, but I decided not to because of copyright.
Yeah,
but that oh death, can't you spare me over for another year? That's in it. That's the chorus.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's basically talking about somebody trying to make a deal with the Grim Reaper about, not now, please. You know, it's a pretty cool song. So, you ready?
I'm ready.
Here's the letter in all of its lack of glory and even less elegance. Once again, it's verbatim. Take it, Paul!
Oh, my God. So, let's see the first one. I find the newspaper not writing about the poem on vain, unassuming. What? On vain, unassuming. A little paragraph would have enough. What? Damn, he can't even spell either. It not the news media fault. The police chief, he kept things quiet and didn't. Yeah, and doesn't let the public know. There's a psycho running around loose, strangling mostly women. They're seven in the ground. Who will be next? How many do I have to kill before I get a name in the paper or some national attention? Do the cops think all those deaths are not related? Golly. Yes, the MO is different in each. Golly.
Golly, Sarge.
Yes, the MO is different in each. But look, a pattern is developing. The victims are tied up. Most have been women. Phone cut. Being some bonding master sadist tendencies, no struggle. Outside the death spot, no the witness spot. Except. The veins kid. Spot, yeah. No death, the death spot, no witnesses except the veins kids. They were very lucky. A phone call saved them. I was going to tape the boys and put plastic bags over their heads like I did Joseph and Shirley. and then hanging the girl. Oh, yeah. God, oh God, what a beautiful sexual relief that would be, would have been. Josephine, when I hung her really, turned me on. Her pleading for mercy.
You want me to help?
And where is it? Does it continue on the second one?
Yes.
Okay, let me open up the second one. Oh, that's a big page right there.
Ooh, yeah. Look at that. You want me to help?
Hold on. Come on, zoom in. What? Then the rope took hold. She helpless, staring at me with wide terror-filled eyes. The rope getting tighter, tighter. You don't understand these things because you're not under the influence of Factor X. The same thing that made Son of Sam, Jack the Ripper, Harvey Glickman, Boston Strangler, Dr. H.H. Holmes, Pantyhose Strangler of Florida, Hillside Strangler, Ted of the West Coast, and many more infamous character killers, which seems senseless, but we cannot help it. There is no help, no cure, except death or being caught and put away. It a terrible nightmare. He actually wrote this because holy crap, I know, this is bad. It a terrible nightmare.
One word.
Nightmare butt. You see, I don't lose any sleep over it. After a thing like Fox, I could come home and go about life like anyone else. And I will be like that until the urge hit me again. It not continuous, but I don't have a lot of time. It take time to set a kill. One mistake and it all over again. All over. No, again, it's not in there. One mistake and it all over. Since I about blew it on the phone, handwriting is out. Since I about blew it on the phone, handwriting is out. Letter guide is too long, and typewriter can be traced too. No shit. Comma. Dot.
Well, you know what? You know how you trace this typewriter? You know how you trace? You just like get a dog, and just have it train its ears to locate somewhere a typewriter screaming bloody murder and begging for mercy.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Oh man. My short poem of death, and maybe a drawing later on real picture, and maybe a tape of the sound will come your way. How will you know me? Not even a question mark, but I'm not surprised. Before the murder or murders, you will receive a copy of the initials BTK. You keep the copy. The original will show up someday on Guess Who. Maybe you not be the luck, the unluck one.
May you not be the unluck one.
Yeah. May you not be the unluck one.
Oh, P.S. My favorite part of the letter.
All the P.S. postscript one.
No, what's coming next? This is my favorite part of the letter.
P.S. How about some name for me? It's time. Seven down and many more to go. I like the following. How about you? Here they are. The BTK Strangler. Wichita Strangler. Poetic Strangler. No, hell no. The Bondage Strangler. Or Psycho, the Wichita Hangman. the Wichita Executioner, the
Garrot,
the Garrot Phantom, or the Asphyxiator. Oh my God,
that sounds like a monster truck,
right? The Asphyxiator.
Sunday.
Come Sunday and watch the Asphyxiator. Number 5, you guess motive and victim. Number 6, you found one, Shirley Vane, lying belly down on an unmade bed.
Hold on. He's writing it Vane, V-A-I-N, but it's actually Vian, V-I-A-N.
Yeah.
And he writes it Vane every single time.
Yeah. Huh.
Wow. You're so Vian.
Fine.
Do you probably think this letter's about you?
Let's see. So number 6, you found one, Shirley Vane, laying belly down on an unmade bed in northeast bedroom, hand tied behind back with black tape and cord, feet and ankles with black tape and legs, ankles tied to west head of the bed with small off white cord, wrap around legs, hands, arm, finally the neck many times, a off white
Plastic
bag.
Oh, he's fresh out. Plastic.
Right. Oh my God, this is terrible.
Hey, I've already done this before.
I'm sorry.
I didn't want to do it a second time. I did it on the BTK debacle episodes.
Man, what? Plastic bag over their head. Loop on with a pink nighty. Was barefooted. She was sick. Use of glass of water and smoke, eye or two cigarette house. A total mess. Kids took some toys with them to the bathroom. Bed against east bedroom. East bedroom door.
Bathroom door.
Bathroom. Is it bathroom? Ah, okay. Yeah. See? It's messing with my mind, man. I'm starting to get dyslexic.
I feel your pain. I've done this before.
Yeah. Chose at random with some pre-planning, motive factor X. Number 7, 1, Nancy Fox laying belly down on made bed in southwest bedroom, hands tied behind back with red pantyhose, feet together with yellow nighty, semi-nude with pink sweater and bra. Small necklace, glasses on west dresser, panties below but many different than the hosiery. She had a smoke and a boom. And that is, it's WBNT, which I would assume spells boom.
Sounds like a TV station. WBNT.
Right? To the bedroom before the final act. Very neat. Housekeeper and dresser riffled. Persing kitchen. Empty paper bag, white coat in living room. Heat up to about 90 degrees, Christmas tree lights on, nighties and hose around the room. Hose bag.
Hose bag. Hose bag.
Hose bag.
Hose bag.
Okay. And the hose around the room, hose bag of orange color, and the hosiery on bed driver license. Gone semi-stained. Seminal stain on or in blue women, yeah, in blue woman wear.
Hold on a second.
What the heck is that?
Blue seminal stain on blue women wear.
Blue women wear.
Dude, Monica Lewinsky was framed.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, it was done before them. Yep. Chose at random with little pre-planning. Motive? Factor X. Number 8. Next victim, maybe. You will find her hanging with a wire noose, hands behind back with black tape or cord, feet with tape or cord gagged. Then cord around the body, to the neck, hooded, maybe possible. Seminal stain in anus or on body. What? Will be chosen at random. Some pre-planning. Motive. Factor X. Holy crap.
Do you need therapy?
I'm just trying to see straight.
Now, in this literary masterpiece of a letter, Dennis is insinuating that he is part of an elite group of killers, son of Sam, who I've already speculated he likely thought of himself as above him. Jack the Ripper? He and later the Zodiac would inspire his letter writing to taunt the police. Harvey Glattman, who was his original idol, he read a lot about him in the detective magazines as a kid, and that was where he got the idea for the bondage photos of victims in distress. The Pantyhose Strangler of Florida, that was Paul John Knowles, a.k.a. the Casanova Killer, another wannabe photographer. The Boston Strangler, Albert DeSalvo, he posed as an authority figure, which is how he gained access, and there's speculation that there may have been more than one killer there. H.H. Holmes, and this is where Dennis got his idea for his murder dungeon barn, and there are pictures that he drew of it, and he wanted a barn and a silo decked out as a murder castle. But there's a difference between a freaking, you know, big brick castle and everything in the middle of a city that's disguised as a legit hotel and a freaking barn, especially an old barn like that. The wood on those things is so freaking rickety, you could kick yourself out. You know, I mean, you could kick a hole in the wall and escape.
Yeah.
You know, and we might get into, like, the description of how, because he did diagrams of how the barn and the silo was going to be set up. We might get into the description of that in part 3. If we don't,
he actually drew out like floor plans and stuff.
Yeah, he did.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't a bad, you know, I wouldn't call him an artist, but I mean, he could draw better than I can. I mean, he wasn't on the level of like Danny Rowling with his artistic ability. I mean, that guy was good, but he, you know, he wasn't bad. I mean, I can't even draw a good-looking stick figure, so I can't exactly criticize anybody. Hillside Strangler. BTK may have been the first wannabe who just rattled off that moniker as one person, but there are definitely two, Kenny Bianchi and Angelo Buono. People only knew about one at this time, which was Buono, but Adam Draper and Tori Adamczyk, the two Idaho chuckleheads who copied the Scream movies in their murder of Casey Joe Soddert, a case that we covered early on, they rattled off the Hillside Strangler in the serial killers that they were going to be more notorious than. And that was well after they knew that there were two Hillside Stranglers. And then lastly, Ted of the West Coast. Like, he's on a first-name basis with Ted Bundy. Another one who was amateur compared to what those two Idaho chuckleheads were going to do. He actually said that. We're going to be like Ted Bundy. Nah, Ted Bundy was an amateur compared to what we're going to do.
Wow.
They killed one person and got busted. But yeah, that basically makes Ted look like an amateur. But Ted was captured in Florida, not on the West Coast, right around the same time that Dennis sent this letter, just a week or so later. I'm really only bringing this up to illustrate his lack of originality. You know, like, lots of my music, any music is inspired by other things. But I'm not going to say, hey, check out my song, The Death of Michael Malloy. It sounds just like, you know, it sounds just like this song by Megadeth. You know, in fact, that was the first time I've ever even said that. It sounds like this song, just like the song by Megadeth. I had never said that before. Because it was inspired by Megadeth, yes. But it doesn't sound like any one song by them in particular. This chucklehead said, hey, so-and-so did this, so I'm going to do the exact same thing too. Death of Michael Malloy. It's a thrash metal song, obviously, if it was inspired by Megadeth. But it's also the title of our very first episode. One of the craziest cases that you've ever heard, and it's all true. And my song literally takes you through the entire story. And I play it's on my Spotify. You know, it's on my Spotify and all that other stuff where you get music from. And it's also, if you want to hear it, it's also at the end of that first Death of Michael Malloy episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, had to go there. I just had to break down, you know, just like what he was saying about these people, why he was saying it, and how unoriginal it is. I was just illustrating that, you know. It's I know exactly why he picked those people, because there's elements of what every single one of those people did, minus H.H. Holmes and minus Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
There is elements by taunting the police, but he never gutted anybody like that, like Jack the Ripper did. But still, there's stuff that he's ripped off from every single one of these people. So it's like, you know, if none of these people if there had never been another serial killer prior to that, there would have been no BTK, because he wouldn't have had anybody to copy off of. But
yeah. Huh.
So now, all of Wichita is on edge. People were buying guns and security systems from ADT, from BTK himself. BTK had also become known as the Boogeyman. And Dennis even said that some of his customers had told him that they had heard somebody breaking in, but he had ran off when the lights came on. You know, they're embellishing the stories made up about the monsters to the monster himself. And he got savage amusement out of hearing stories like that. And you got to think, you know, I would say probably a very small percentage of the stories that got told to him were places that he actually did get run off from. Maybe one or two, if any. Most of them were probably just people trying to, oh yeah, he was here. And he's probably thinking, no, I wasn't. But I could be. that's just crazy. People always got to put themselves into it and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but there were many attempted hits during this time where he was, in fact, run off, like I said. And all throughout his spree, Dennis would still be peeping on neighbors, still performing self-bondage and photographing it. He never got caught until Paula, his wife, walked in on him.
Ooh.
In their bedroom. And he had some bondage items on. And he was by the bedroom window, and he was spying on a neighbor. And she flipped out and demanded he get help. her main concern was the children, obviously, and Carrie had just been born in June of 1978. This wasn't all that happened in 1978. His idol, Ted from the West Coast, was facing trial in Florida, and a new monster was just captured in December near Chicago. Pick a guess. John Wayne Gacy.
John Wayne Gacy.
Early in 1979, the Hillside Stranglers, plural, now identified as two killers, were captured. And Dennis followed these stories with great interest. And he had his troop of killers that he idolized, and Gacy was added to the list, but there was others that he did follow as well. He found a Reader's Digest article about Carlton Gary, which was George's stocking strangler. He was a young and attractive guy, but his victims were older women. So not having an original bone in his body, Dennis changed his MO and began to start stalking older women up at that point. Huh. He was like, oh, well, the stocking strangler did it. And, you know, I'm getting older, so yeah, maybe, yeah, he did his job. I better do it too. Now, next up is BTK's, probably his most famous misfire. And stupid one, too. I mean, he was stalking the wrong person, but we'll get to that in a second. He had been stalking a 63-year-old woman named Anna Williams. On April 28, 1979, he broke into her home and waited. And waited. And waited some more. And waited some more. He waited there for hours, and he finally got tired of waiting, so he just went through her things. He had stolen some of her clothing, her, you know, some of her jewelry and some of her money. Her phone line had been cut because, you know, that's his trademark.
Got to do that.
Yeah, and no word on if he drank some water in that one, but he hadn't killed anybody there, so he probably wasn't allowed to drink the water at that point. The water is a celebratory thing.
Yeah.
So. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's like the champagne.
But there were no leads until June 15th. Anna's daughter had come over, or Anna's grandmother. Okay. Anna's granddaughter had come over and brought in her mail for her. And there was a box addressed to Anna's deceased husband. Hmm. Now, keep in mind, this happened in April when he broke in. This is June 15th. They actually they opened it up, and it had a photocopy of a poem, a drawing of a bound nude woman who had been sexually assaulted. Her hands and feet were tied to a pole. Anna's stolen scarf and a piece of jewelry was in the box.
Whoa.
The poem, in addition to the content addressed to her late husband, had the letters BTK on both sides of the paper. And it went like this. Take it away, Paul.
Oh, Anna, why don't you appear?
Why didn't you appear?
Why didn't you appear? See, I'm getting used to freaking reading it wrong. I got to practice.
Yeah, when it's right, you think it's wrong.
Right? Jesus. okay. T.
T was
perfect plan of deviant pleasure to so bold on that spring night.
N-I-T-E.
Knit. Night. Yeah. Night. The dark night. My inner felling hot with propension of the new awakening season. Worn. Wet with inner.
Oh my God.
Worn, wet with inner fear and rapture, my pleasure of entanglement, like new vines at night. Making sure I even said that right. Oh my God. Oh, Anna, why didn't you appear? Drop of fear, fresh spring rain. Would roll down from your nakedness to scent To scent to lofty fever that burns within. I think I just don't read this. I just say each word.
There you go.
In that small world of longing, fear, rapture, and desperation, the game we play fall on devil ears. Fantasy spring forth, mounts. So to storm fury, then winter calm at the end.
That's clam.
To clam at the end. See, I told you, it just brings dyslexia to you. Oh, Anna, why don't you appear? Why didn't you appear? I am never going to be right again. Alone, now, in another time span, I lay with sweet enrapture, garments across most private thought, bed of spring, moist grass, clean before the sun, enslaved with control, warm wind scenting the air, sun, yeah, sunlight sparkle, tears in eyes, so deep and clear, alone again, I trod in past memory of mirrors, and ponder why for number 8 is not. Oh Anna,
why didn't you appear? You all right?
Peace be with us, brother.
Bad grammar and spelling galore. A similar box was sent to Cake TV, and it had been delivered, hand-delivered to the post office by a man who may have been Dennis himself. He was described as a white man in his 30s, around 5'8". And if that actually was him, that's just insane. I mean, I'm not going to say he's got balls. I'm just going to say he's full of himself. He's like delusional. I mean, he has to walk right by the most wanted pictures in the post office to get up to the desk. I mean, granted, he's not on them yet, but still, you know, they're used to looking for people there, you know?
Yeah.
I think it actually was him.
Yeah, it was. I think so.
Yeah, because I mean, think about it. If he had somebody else do it, yeah, they could track down who that person was. You know, they obviously didn't track the person down, so they probably didn't have cameras or anything like that. But still, if they track him down, oh, this guy gave it to me, you know, and boom. So yeah, it was him.
And people wonder why there's cameras everywhere nowadays. Because if this was being done today's age, he would have been caught long ago.
Yeah, done like dinner.
Yeah.
I mean, in part 3, he's going to throw a box into a return slot at a library. And, you know, if that had been done today, he'd have been on camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, the box sent to Cake had similar items and the poem. And Dennis screwed up in this attempt as well on Anna. Not just the fact that she wasn't there, that she didn't appear. He wasn't lusting after a 63-year-old woman. He was lusting after a 24-year-old granddaughter who spent lots of time there at Anna's house. He thought the granddaughter was Anna. But after they received this box, Anna moved away immediately. She didn't even bother to pack up her things. She just got the hell out of Dodge, and I do not blame her one bit.
Yeah.
But you see, it goes back to what we were saying earlier about if at once you don't succeed, try again. Why didn't he go back? You know? I really think there's something to that.
Yeah, I think so. He's got some method, but...
Yeah, and a lot of madness.
Yes. All
right. Later in 1979, Paula caught Dennis in drag again. This time he was in a slip with a noose around his neck. His job with ADT had him staying in hotels frequently, and he would normally do his bondage play there, but he was home one night and feeling horny, feeling gutsy, and he decided he'd do it there. Again. Hell hath no fury like a woman catching her husband in ladies' clothes tied up for a second time.
That was it for her.
No, it wasn't.
No.
He did sleep on the couch for a few nights, and he decided that he'd never do that at home again. So now we're moving forward to 1984. This was the 10-year anniversary of the Otero murders, and BTK hadn't killed since 1978. Although he never stopped trolling. Factor X had been nagging at him. It had been all along, but now it was getting worse. And we'll go into detail about Factor X in part 3, because it's BTK interesting. Which, I mean, BTK and his logic and the way his outlook on life is just like Hank Hill says, it's like a tire fire. You just got to watch it burn. You just got to grab a beer and watch it burn.
Sit back and enjoy. Don't forget the popcorn.
Yeah. So a new task force was assembled, and it was called Ghostbusters because Ghostbusters had just come out. And at this point, BTK was a ghost. Mm-hmm. So it was basically FBI as well as volunteers from other precincts. You know, basically fresh eyes that hadn't looked at the case yet. So the FBI Behavioral Sciences Department released a profile on BTK, and this is what the profile said. Take it away, Paul.
From the information provided to me, which is limited, no crime scene photos, police report, etc., I have constructed the most likely type of person to have committed the murders in the 1970s. I do not believe the murders from the 80s were connected. 1. Single. White male, 28 to 30. 2. Resided near the Oteros or spent time in the area to form fantasy about Josephine. This was his main target. Lived in a house, not apartment. 3. Over 6'1", tall and trim, neat in appearance, with short hair. Clothes darker by choice. Sounds like a Mario Brothers game. 4, considered quiet and conservative by those who would know him. Modest. I believe people would mistake him as kind because of his quiet demeanor, but he suffers from extreme pathology, psychopath. There are no voices or demons. This man knew exactly what he was doing. He was, and if alive, still would be an extremely sad individual. Sad for himself and his pain, completely self-absorbed. Pretty much getting there.
they're half right, half wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have a breakdown of that here when you're done.
All right. Because I did not have access to the letters, his job status is questionable to me. I do feel that his job was very secondary to him. Money was not important either. His compulsion to kill was, and always would be, 1. He would not be satisfied with fantasy. He would be forced to act. Therefore, I find it hard to believe that he did not kill between 1974 and 1977. If there were no murders in Kansas at that time, he was someplace else. He was very immature. The games, magazines, choice of child target, the fact that he did not sexually assault lends credence to this. He masturbated on the victims and did not rape. At the same time, he is very patient in his crimes, stalking and killing without detection. This makes him a paradox, which in and of itself would be disturbing even to him. I do feel like he is very comfortable with books and would have many of them in his home. Not just a few, many, many books. True crimes as well as books, which feed his fantasies. I feel as if they would be found all over the house. He was smart, highly intelligent. Poor damn writer. This is not someone who is heavily into drugs, alcohol. They do not cause his crimes. He may drink at times, but that would not be the excuse for the murders. Number five. He had a car, which would have been dark in color as well. However, this is a person who would enjoy walking around the neighborhoods looking at people and victims. Number six. Due to his immaturity, he would be comfortable with people much younger than him. He would not have many friends, only acquaintances who really do not know him. All of his relationships would be superficial. He would not be married. And any history of women would be short-lived and meaningless. There is not a person who would stop killing on his own. There are three reasons to stop. One, death. Two, prison. And three, too disabled or sick to kill. Period. This is a compulsive psychopath who enjoyed killing and wouldn't give it up. I generally give more detailed analysis, but due to limited information, this is what I can provide. Dr. Deborah Sherman Coughlin, Violent Crimes Institute President.
Okay, so let's break this down. One was wrong because he was over 30. Mm-hmm. Two was right because he did live near the Oteras. Not too far. I mean, he didn't live like on the same block as them, but he lived close by.
Yeah.
Wrong on his height. He was 5'8". He was only 5'8". Four, right, he was a quiet guy. There were no voices in his head. That was wrong, but he did know what he was doing. He wasn't sad. You know, he took a lot of pride in his family and, you know, and his killing and all that stuff. His job was the most important thing to him. The killing was the most important thing to him. That's right and wrong because, yeah, I'd say that the killing and his family were equal.
Yeah.
Not going to be satisfied by fantasy. That's definitely right. Forced to act, and he was forced to act and didn't do anything between 74 and 77. Maybe. I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced that he didn't. There's a lot of unsolved cases.
Yeah.
Immature? Definitely. Patient? Definitely. Bookworm? Definitely. Mm-hmm. No drugs or alcohol? Definitely. Has a car? Liked walking in the neighborhood? Yes. Comfortable with younger people? Definitely. Not a lot of friends? Eh. Nah. There were a lot of people that liked him, like the people in his church, the troop, you know, the people in the scout troops and all that stuff. I mean, there, but then again, people that worked with him hated him.
Mm.
Yeah. They said he was a real pain in the ass to work with. People at ADT said that. In fact, in Mindhunter, Mindhunter season one and two, they're gearing up BTK. Have you ever seen Mindhunter?
It sounds very familiar.
It's how the behavioral sciences division was formed in the FBI with John Douglas. The lead character was based on John Douglas, the famous profiler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And in season one and two, it shows BTK like gearing up to, you know, like in between scenes. They don't profile BTK. They just have like little asides of him, like getting, you know, like stalking people and stuff like that. And there's this one scene where he's, and I'm guessing that this is when he worked at ADT. Somebody comes in and he's like, it's like, I need another roll of duct tape. He's like, I need the old spool. I can't give you another roll of duct tape until you give me the old spool from, you know, just a dick. And then later on, he becomes a compliance officer.
Yeah.
that's part three. We'll get there. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, so it's just like he did have people that liked him, and he also had just as many people that thought he was a piece of shit. And the people that thought he was a piece of shit were the ones that were right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not to be married or have a long, meaningful relationship with a woman. That's definitely wrong.
Yeah.
He would either have to die, be imprisoned or disabled for him to stop killing. That's definitely right. So we have 6 wrong, 10 right, and 3 neutral.
That's weird, though, how he was able to separate his marriage and his association or relationship with his wife to the women.
A lot of them do that. Jerry Brutos did it, although, you know, I mean, we'll probably be covering him soon, like in the next couple months. But you know, because he's come up a lot in like asides. He did it in like part one of this one. He did it in, you know, like the one that we did with Matt on Ford, Wayne Adam Ford. Yeah. He came up, Jerry Brutos came up on that one. I mean, he's been coming up just here and there randomly and, so, you know, recently in quite a few episodes. So we're going to get to him. But his wife allegedly didn't know anything about it. But with her, it's just kind of like, nah, bullshit. Yeah. You knew.
Yeah.
I mean, but a lot of them can compartmentalize and just live 2 completely separate lives. But I would say BTK was probably the most successful at it.
Yeah.
So. The Ghostbusters were on the case, and they were asking for blood samples from multiple suspects and, you know, voluntary. They weren't subpoenaing people or anything like that, but they were just, but then again, if you're BTK, are you going to volunteer a blood sample? No.
Mm-hmm. Nah.
But they were wondering if BTK had been imprisoned or for something else or died or had moved away because nobody had heard from him in several years. The last thing anybody had heard from him was the box that was sent to Anna and Cake TV, and that was 1979, and we're in 1984. But Dennis was still feeding his kinky sides, reading pornos, detective magazines, photographing himself in bondage, stalking people, occasional burglary, and he was doing well at his job and being a good father and a good husband. Yeah. So on April 26, 1985, Factor X was really doing a number on Dennis. He needed to kill. And he had been trolling around doing BTK stuff when he noticed a neighbor of his, 53-year-old Marine Hedge. They were friendly. She would wave to Dennis when their paths crossed, and he would wave back. She was being friendly, and he was sizing her up behind his fake smile. He figured she was just the right size, and he often wondered what her neck would look like with a rope around it.
Ah.
And I got to look something up. When was Ed Kemper caught? There's a reason.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He had long been. Okay. So him saying that he wondered what his net, he was arrested in 1973.
Oh.
But he would say that, you know, when he was stalking these co-eds and everything, he would say he would see an attractive woman and wonder, you know, just like on one hand, you would wonder what it would be like to take her out on a date. Another hand, wanted to know what her head would look like on a stick. So I'm pretty sure that that's just BTK plagiarizing Ed Kemper.
Yeah.
Dumbass.
Wow.
So she had a, Maureen had a male friend, but Dennis wasn't too concerned about him. But targeting somebody who lived a few doors down from him was risky, but he was BTK and he could pull it off. I mean, after all, he had read articles about how law enforcement anticipates the criminal's next move, so he was ready. They don't know where you live, dumb shit.
Yeah.
Project Cookie or Deflower was now underway. All the signs said go. Cookie was because her house was a cookie cutter house. Deflower, it's not why you think. It was because of a little garden. You know, she had a little garden of flowers, and Dennis liked flowers too. So it makes perfect sense. And also, her address had a 6 in it, which refers to threes. Two of them, to be precise. Douchebag.
Wow.
The target date arrived. April 26th. He and his son's scout troop had a camp out scheduled. Dennis got there early to set everything up. Later, everybody else arrived, and once everybody got settled in, he complained of a headache. He said that he was going to home, going, he's, he said that he was going, damn it. He said that he was going to go home to rest and to take care of it, but he'd be back if he could. So he drove away. He changed out of his scout clothes and into regular clothes, and he prepared his hit kit. He parked at a bowling alley and went in. He pretended to bowl. I'm not sure how one pretends to bowl.
Yeah, how do you pretend to bowl?
I don't know. I mean, maybe like countless gutter balls, but even if you're just throwing nothing but gutter balls, that's still bowling.
Mm-hmm.
You're still bowling. You suck at it, but you're still bowling.
Yeah.
Like if I throw a dart, if I throw a dart and hit somebody behind me, I'm still playing darts. I just suck at it. I used to be really good at darts, like really good. I used to be on a league, and then back in like 2002, I had shoulder surgery because I had a torn rotator cuff. Ooh. that was caused by a bone spur that had formed that was like the size of my thumb.
Ooh.
Yeah,
for playing too many darts.
No. And not other things either. Get out of there. Get your mind out of the gutter. But that was in the days before they could just make those pinhole incisions and do that. So I've got like a scar that's like 6 inches long right across.
Yeah.
So I had shoulder surgery, and after it got rehabbed and everything and all that stuff and everything, got it back to, you know, as normal as it was going to get. I mean, you know, I'm like, okay. I was out at a bar and there were people throwing darts, and I'm like, hey, I just had shoulder surgery last year. Once they were done, I'm like, do you mind if I use your darts and just throw? I just want to see how I am. So I line up a shot, I throw it, hit the bullseye dead center.
Ooh.
I was aiming for the outer 20.
Oh.
It just got worse and worse and worse and worse. Yeah, but then later on, I got a dartboard at my house and started practicing and everything. I'm pretty decent now, but I'm not as good as I used to be. If I got back into it hardcore, like, you know, like really put time into it, I probably could get back to as good as I used to be. But I'll never forget that. You know, people were impressed when I hit a bullseye dead center right after your first throw since shoulder surgery. Wow. I'm impressed. I was aiming for the outer 20. But,
hashtag, but I digress.
Good, man. It's good. Good for trying.
So, as he was pretending to bowl, if you know how to pretend to bowl, send us an email, ckcbpodcast@gmail.com, or hit us up on social.
Yeah. Or if anybody's is good at pretending on doing anything.
Yeah.
Say what it is.
I'm good at pretending to podcast.
Yeah. See how good we can pretend.
What?
And then see how good we can pretend. You know, like I'm pretending to do this and pretending to do that, but how do you pretend? Do you just think about it?
Women pretend to have orgasms.
Because once you do it, you're not pretending.
Women pretend to have orgasms.
That's a whole different show. And a conspiracy.
Jennifer, you're 16.
Did you get that?
No.
Jennifer, you're 16.
Remember that Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla, that talk show where teenagers would call in and talk about sex?
Oh.
Adam Carolla would be like,
Allison, you're 16.
How they didn't get arrested for that, I don't know.
Things were different back then, man. I mean, look at Archie Bunker.
So, anyway, hashtag, but I digress again. But he also ordered a beer and he drank some of it. And I guess he pretended to drink the beer. You know, he spilled some on his mouth and on his neck and poured the rest on his shirt. He then left the bowling alley and he called a taxi. He didn't pretend to call the taxi. He actually called the taxi from a payphone. But when the cab arrived, he pretended to be sloppy drunk and he gave the driver his address. And once they got to his street, he told the driver to stop and drop him off a couple blocks away so that he could try to walk it off and get some fresh air. So he was still pretending to be drunk. I can see how you can pretend to be drunk.
I've done that a couple times. Well, and I was still I was inebriated. You know, I've, you know, had a few, but enough to where I can control myself. But in a particular situation, as protection, that is your form of protection, is to pretend you're actually drunker than you really are, because there's a point where you have to stay alert.
Well, yeah, like you're at a bar and you know, somebody that's extremely unattractive comes up and starts hitting on you. You're just like,
you want to get enough information to know that get the hell away.
You're drunk.
You're drunk.
Yep.
God, one time I was at, this is a short story, I promise. One time I was at this bar and this was years ago, hanging out with a friend of mine. My friend, he's very introverted, very quiet, very shy. And I'm the exact opposite of that. But so I was, you know, we're sitting there talking. All of a sudden, this woman, you know, she's drunk and she's annoying and she's, you know, wasn't doing it for him. And he looks over at me and just kind of gives me a look. And then he's like, I'll be right back. You want a drink, Bill? I'm like, sure. So he goes to the bar and I knew what he wanted me to do. He goes, so I look at, and I'm buzzing too at this point. So I look over, I say, how's it going? She's great. She goes, I like him. He's cute. And I said, you see that table over there? She said, yeah. I said, well, why don't you go over to it? I was brutal when I was in my 20s, man. Yeah. And that is one of the rudest things I've ever said. You know, but she interrupted our conversation, you know? Yeah. It's like we were talking. We weren't out there like, you know, we weren't like trying to pick up women. We weren't social. We were having a serious discussion.
Yeah.
So she just has this horrified look on her face, and she's like, she gets up and she walks away, and he comes back and he hands me a beer. I'm like, thanks. He goes, he's like, you got what I was, you picked up what I was putting down. I said, I did. He's like, what'd you say to her? I said, what'd you say to her? I told him, he's just like, that was cold. He's like, but thank you.
Oh, man.
Anyway, no more digressions this episode, I promise. Maybe. I can pretend to promise.
We always got to have these little innuendos in there. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he crept up to Maureen's house, and her car was there. Damn it. She wasn't supposed to be home yet. But he realized that the house was dark, so she must be asleep. So this presents a problem. He had to go through with it because he had left his car back at the bowling alley, and his plan was to steal her car. But then again, you know, she's asleep. Breaking in might wake her up. So he cut the phone line, his trademark, and then he quietly broke in and realized that she actually wasn't home after all. So about that time, car pulls up in the driveway, and he hears a car door slam, and he hears two voices. Maureen was home, and her friend was with her, and he hid in the bedroom closet and waited. Maureen and her friend sat down on the couch, and they were carrying on like there wasn't a serial killer hiding in the closet. As he waited, he began coming up with contingency plans in case the man didn't leave. Big bad BTK wasn't going to have his plan thwarted by a male again. Yeah, he'd just off the man quickly and then have his fun time with Maureen. You know, finally, the man left and Maureen went to bed, and Dennis waited until she went to sleep, and then he emerged and turned on the light and pounced. Dennis wanted pictures. He wanted to gag and bind her and take her to the house take her from the house alive, but Maureen was fighting like a Marine.
Oh, yeah.
So he decided to kill her and take the body somewhere else for pictures. So he stripped her, cuffed her, then tied her up, and then strangled her to death. He then wrapped her up in a blanket and then left her on the bed while he went through her things and stole her car keys, driver's license, and a few other things. He had to figure out how he was going to get her out of the house. So he went into the kitchen and got a glass of water, also his trademark. George Carlin says, swimming is not a sport. It's a way to keep from drowning. I say, drinking a glass of water is not a trademark. It's a way to keep from getting dehydrated.
Yep.
So Dennis took the body to the trunk of her own car. And he had never moved a body before, and he said it was like moving a concrete box.
No, you know, shit.
Poor. What do you know?
What? Oh, I work. I. I don't want to give too much away.
Oh boy,
we have to test. I do. I have to test systems that hold body weight.
Yeah.
And we get what they call rock people or sand people, and they weigh anywhere between 150 to 175 pounds, and we have to lift them into seats.
What about picking somebody up and throwing them over your shoulder like that? Like he would if anybody was
if
drunk.
You picked up dead weight like that. Holy crap, that's heavy.
Okay.
Is that?
Because all I've ever done is picked up a drunk person and thrown him over my shoulder. But poor BTK was worried that she might hurt his puny little back. How selfish of her! He got her loaded up and he drove her to Christ Lutheran Church. That was his church, and he was a key holder there. He hadn't been elected president yet, but he was an elder. He dragged her inside. He put black trash bags all over the windows, so drivers wouldn't see lights on in the church late at night. He then posed her naked body in lewd bondage positions all over the church and took a bunch of pictures. But he wants everybody to know that he did not defile the altar.
Jeez.
Dennis respects God's house. Dennis has morals, you know.
He was a considerate killer.
Yes. And he would not defile God's house by doing lewd bondage stuff with the person that he had murdered on the altar. Mm. But wait a minute. Where are sacrifices done?
On the altar.
On the altar. Different kind of altar, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But the name's the same.
The name is the same. He should have said pulpit.
Yeah. Or cauldron.
Well, he didn't expect that there would be a podcaster, 40 years later.
Yeah, tearing his methods apart.
Yeah. So daylight was coming, so Dennis loaded her up and dumped her on a stretch of road where people were known to dump trash in a ditch. He covered her body with leaves and sticks. Another trademark? Lots of killers do that, too. They just cover them up with like leaves and sticks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he started to head back to the bowling alley, but he realized that he had left the cord behind that he'd used to tie her up. He didn't go back for it yet, but he ditched the car at the bowling alley. He jumped back into his car and made it back to camp before anybody woke up. Maureen's body wasn't discovered, so he went back a couple days later and got the cord, because it was the same cord that he had used on the Oterios and Shirley Vian.
Well, at least he's acting green, recycling.
Maureen's body wasn't discovered, so he went back to get the cord a couple of days later, because it was the same cord that he had used on the Oterios and Shirley Vian.
Just an observation, Dennis. You want a trademark? Leave that cord to be found would be a real trademark.
Good point. Yeah, that would be a trademark.
Yeah.
And once Maureen's body was discovered, her friend became the prime suspect for a long time, because he was the last known, last person known to see her alive. That sucks. And that's,
yeah,
something like that happens again, but that'll be in part three. But also, this scene was recreated in the TV show Dexter. There was one episode, I can't remember which episode it was, but in one episode, Dexter was the scout leader for his son Harrison's troop. And they had a camp out on an island, and everybody went to sleep. So Dexter took his boat, sailed across the harbor, docked it, got into his car, took out a victim, disposed of the body, and then went back to camp before anybody woke up. And that little meme that I made about Art the Clown and BTK.
Yeah.
That's what I was telling you about before we started about the scene. If I can find something that if something that stands out as that particular episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to do another one with Dexter and BTK. So.
That's a show I haven't actually watched yet. I keep seeing it pop up at randomly.
It's a great show.
Streaming services.
It is a great show. It is. Yeah. I mean, I guarantee you, if you start watching it, you will not want to stop until you're done.
Almost like Breaking Bad.
I would say I'm going to catch some heat for this, but I would say Dexter's better than Breaking Bad. That's my opinion.
Wow.
I like Breaking Bad, but I like Dexter a lot better.
Huh.
So we have two murders to go, as well as the crazy ass events that lead to BTK's capture, and we'll cover all of that in part three when we hopefully wrap up the series. I don't want this going four parts. Because if it goes four parts, then part four would be like 20 or 30 minutes long. So we might as well just make part three like a really long one.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to have to. I mean, because there's really no way around it. We have two murders to go. Then we have like the whole batshit crazy, things to pick up. We got to get into the project, the Factor X, we got to get into what that is. That's going to take some time. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Both these episodes are around hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes long, part one and part two. part three will probably be the longest of the series, but maybe not. I don't know. I thought part two was going to be like over 2 hours long.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, I mean, yeah, I'm so glad that we decided to actually go through with the reboot. I mean, we've been teasing it for months.
Yeah, yeah.
But.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I'm curious. I'm ready for the other parts or the what would they call it? The season finale.
But we don't do seasons on this podcast. So
if there were, that's what it would be called.
Yeah. I'm really digging this series so far. I think that it is going to be, I'm not going to be BTK and call it the best, but I'm going to say it's going to be among the best series on BTK out there that there is available. All right. And that's a huge step from being the worst to one of the best. So.
Absolutely. So, heck yeah.
Anyway, I have no ado. Or wait, that's wrong part of the show for that. Thanks. Oh shit.
Yeah, it happens. It's a lot better than freaking reading his damn poetry.
Well, there's more stuff that you're gonna have to read. But
I'm expecting it.
Like I said, I wasn't gonna do that again. I've already done it once. Now you weren't there for it, but that doesn't change the fact that I already did it.
Yeah, I feel for you.
And I did it in part of like the two worst episodes that CKCB's ever done. Well, those two, and then there's one more. There's four episodes that I would put in as the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst by far that this podcast has ever done, and they're all up there. I'm not going to say which ones they are, other than the BTK debacle, but
yeah.
But there's two more around there somewhere. But anyway.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We appreciate the hell out of it. And check out our socials. The website's a one-stop shop for everything. CKCBpodcast.com. All the links are going to be in the descriptions. Like, subscribe, rate, review. You can leave reviews on Apple and on YouTube. And check us out. I mean, we like to interact. So, yeah. And once again, Paul, tell them about your podcast as well.
And you can find my podcast on all the podcast networks. It's called The Seance. From Conscious Radio Network and on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and the YouTube channel. You can find the Seance podcast on the YouTube channel under what the heck is it? Jeez. I'm about brain dead all that reading of poetry today. Conscious Radio Network. Just search for Conscious Radio Network on the YouTube channel and you'll find the Seance podcast. Talk about metaphysics, paranormal, mysteries of mind, space, time, a little bit of conspiracy, science research, all the craziness. So,
cool.
And also, for those who are watching this, don't forget, if this is the first time watching us, please click subscribe, like, share, comment, and follow wherever you listen to your podcast.
Because we're everywhere.
Yes.
So, until next week, later.
Later on, guys.
see.